Morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. A slight rise in oil prices, public lands management, and updates on Black Lives Matter demonstrations, which have continued across the state. It's Tuesday, June 16th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. The Montana Health Department reported 8 new lab-confirmed COVID-19 cases yesterday after reporting more than 30 new COVID-19 cases over the weekend. New cases were discovered in Custer, Bighorn, Cascade, Flathead, Ravalli, and Stillwater counties on Monday. Over the weekend, Lewis and Clark, Missoula, Lake, and Gallatin counties also found new cases. Custer and Bighorn counties both have 11 cases that public health officials say are related to small cluster outbreaks. As of Monday morning, Montana was reporting 80 active cases of COVID-19 and 7 hospitalizations. 19 people have died due to the coronavirus illness. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and local health officials recommend following social distancing guidelines, such as maintaining 6 feet distance from others, wearing a mask in public, and washing hands frequently to prevent the spread of coronavirus. In recent weeks, crude oil prices rose slightly after dropping in April due to an ongoing global price war and the novel coronavirus pandemic. Kayla DeRoche reports Montana's oil prices are following the trend and could help bolster the state's revenue.
This month, Montana's small petroleum industry follows the nation's modest recovery in oil prices as the world reopens its borders locally and globally. Williston Sweet in eastern Montana dropped to roughly -$47 in April and rose to around $30 per barrel in recent weeks. For comparison, in June last year, Williston Sweet was selling in the $40 range per barrel. Member-based Montana Petroleum Association Executive Director Alan Olson says demand has increased as travel restrictions put in place to limit the spread of coronavirus lift. He adds low demand and bottomed out prices led companies to decrease production.
With the low price, a lot of wells were shut in. Drilling has slowed down to a crawl.
He says that forces inventory stocks down and in turn drives prices back up. A June report from the U.S. Energy Information Administration writes that the worldwide crude oil market is returning to normal sooner than predicted due to the recovery in demand and cut to oil production. A profitable oil industry is good news for the Montana economy, according to Mark Haggerty with Bozeman-based Headwaters Economics.
It's more than 6% of the state's general fund budget. So the revenue is really the most important part of the continuing oil production that we have. And a significant portion of that also goes back to the local governments.
A representative from the Montana Board of Oil and Gas Conservation says the state will have a better idea of April and May oil production numbers when reports for those months come in, and it's possible for wells to reopen if demand rises. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Crow tribal leadership is extending the reservation's stay-home order until July 15th as the reservation and nearby Bighorn County saw a steady uptick in COVID-19 cases over the past 2 weeks. The order issued yesterday requires all non-essential businesses to remain closed for another month. The order also encourages tribal members and residents to wear masks, wash hands frequently, and limit social gatherings. The executive order from Chairman A.J. Not Afraid said the decision to extend the stay-home order from June 15th to July 15th was made after consulting with medical and public health experts and should be observed despite the state of Montana easing restrictions. As of yesterday evening, Bighorn County was reporting 11 active cases of the COVID-19 illness, along with 34 recoveries and 2 deaths. The nearby Northern Cheyenne tribe is under similar restrictions until June 19th. Montana's health department distributed $84 million in Medicaid and Child Health Insurance Program benefits to people ineligible for those programs, according to an audit that will be presented to lawmakers this morning. The report found there could be a corresponding hole in the state's general fund if the federal government tries to reclaim those payments. The Legislative Audit Division report says the federally defined questioned costs came during a two-fiscal-year span ending June 2019. The State Department of Public Health and Human Services rejects several of the audit's key findings. In a letter to the Legislative Auditor's Office, Department Director Sheila Hogan wrote that auditors tested program member eligibility using unapproved standards inconsistent with federal regulations. Hogan also wrote the report discusses evaluating member eligibility using data sources prohibited by Montana's federally approved Medicaid plan. The U.S. Senate is expected to vote this week on landmark legislation that permanently funds a major purse for public lands management and funnels money towards national park maintenance. Charles Bolte with Montana Public Radio News reports.
The Great American Outdoors Act promises $900 million annually for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which uses offshore oil and gas lease royalties to pay for playgrounds, parks, and other local projects. The act also sets aside $9.5 billion to address backlogged maintenance and infrastructure projects in the country's national parks. Both Montana U.S. senators have voiced support for the bill. Republican Steve Daines, who is running for re-election this year, noted the importance of the act on the Senate floor last week.
Only once in a great while does such a historic piece of conservation legislation come along, perhaps once every 50 years. It's essential we protect and maintain access to these lands for future generations.
Democrat John Tester says he's introduced a bill to fund the LWCF every session since he was elected.
The fact is we worked long and hard with local conservation groups and public land enthusiasts around the country to build support where it never existed before.
Montana-based wildlife and outdoor recreation groups praise the Great American Outdoors Act, saying it preserves critical habitat and boosts the state's outdoor recreation economy. Some livestock and other groups oppose the legislation, saying it allows land management agencies to add acreage to lands that are already poorly managed. A vote on the Great American Outdoors Act is expected this week. For Montana Public Radio, I'm Charles Bolte.
There was minimal growth yesterday on a wildfire burning near Clancy, south of Helena. Strong winds fanned the Lump Gulch fire Saturday afternoon, which led to the mandatory evacuation of around 20 homes over the weekend. Incident spokesperson Dwayne Busey says fire behavior was very quiet yesterday.
Once things calmed down a little bit and then got the rain on top of that and cooler temperatures, yeah, it's really moderated. So, and no expected growth at this point beyond the perimeter.
The latest mapping has revised the fire's size down to 1,100 acres from 1,500 acres. All mandatory evacuations have been lifted. All pre-evacuation notices for Lewis and Clark County were lifted Sunday. A handful of pre-evacuation notices are still in effect for some neighborhoods in Jefferson County. NCWEB lists the fire at 15% containment. An estimated 1,000 people gathered outside the Montana State Capitol on Sunday to protest the death of George Floyd in police custody and police treatment of people of color. Kevin Trevlin reports the protest was mostly nonviolent, though a riot control team stepped in at one point to separate attendees and counter-protesters.
Protest organizer Teddy Jump is asking police departments to tamp down on dangerous use of force on suspects. He also wants them to reconsider their budgets and for city councils to redirect money toward community projects like women's shelters. Jump said that message was loud and clear Sunday, and that police officers mostly hung to the sidelines and kept an eye on the protest.
I think the police presence was appropriate at almost all times. I was really impressed.
The demonstration featured multiple speakers. Helena Mayor Wilmot Collins, Montana's first black mayor, commended attendees for accomplishing the protest without violence. Rachel Carroll Rivas, co-executive director of the Montana Human Rights Network, urged the crowd to educate themselves on racism in Montana and have difficult conversations with family members. It was only near the event's conclusion that counter-protesters parked across from the Capitol. Jump says the two groups chanted back and forth until the counter-protesters pulled out guns. Lewis and Clark County Sheriff Leo Dutton says that's when
things got rough.
A joint civil disobedience team of police officers and deputies wearing body armor and helmets and carrying batons lined up between attendees and counter-protesters until tensions subsided. Jump says such equipment made the wrong statement.
It scared people. It scared people a lot. I could see the fear in people's faces as, you know, the men in riot gear came over towards them. It was to protect them, but it said that they were ready for either side to go, you know, sour, even though it was clearly one that was attempting to be violent.
Dutton says the riot team was initially hidden from view to avoid agitating protesters and that it was only deployed to maintain the peace amid potential violence. He says he couldn't have deployed the team with any less equipment than they had.
I really can't, because I understand the concern, but it's like asking my deputies to quit wearing life-saving ballistic vests. I can't do that either.
Still, Dutton outlined numerous measures he says his office has taken to reduce inequities in policing. He also says he's open to further conversation.
No one that I know of embraces what happened in Minneapolis, Minnesota. No one. You're living in a dream world if you don't say, yes, let's look at this and what can we do better.
Helena Police Chief Steve Hagen is on vacation, and other officers weren't authorized to talk about Sunday's protest. But Jump and Dutton noted two specific conflicts at the event. One man who was yelling at protesters was eventually charged with impersonating a police officer, and a misdemeanor assault was referred to the city attorney's office after a woman got into a confrontation with protesters. Kevin Trevlin, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Kevin Trevlin is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America State House reporter. A Missoula rally on Sunday drew hundreds to decry armed vigilante presence at racial justice demonstrations. The event was spurred by alleged harassment and attack on a protester by a group of armed people during a protest at the county courthouse over a week ago. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports.
As an afternoon shower trickles to a stop on Sunday, about 450 people are spilling out of the pavilion in Missoula's Karras Park. They're wrapped as speakers take the stage.
You need to care. You need to care!
That's Speaker London Mark at the Black Lives Matter event. For weeks, demonstrators have gathered impromptu at the Missoula County Courthouse to protest racial injustice and the killing of George Floyd. In contrast, Sunday's rally was highly organized and focused on black speakers sharing their stories. The event was a response to the ongoing presence of people wielding guns at rallies in Missoula. A group of those individuals allegedly followed, harassed, and piled atop a black teenage protester at a demonstration on Friday, June 5th. Local police are investigating what happened. Speaker at the rally and Missoula hotelier Shaylee Hall said she was at the courthouse when the young man, a friend of hers, was attacked. The group of armed individuals who tackled the protester on the courthouse lawn claim he appeared suspicious.
But what really happened was that they stalked him for a majority of that protest. They cornered him. They chased him into the courthouse where he thought he could find solidarity, but instead was turned in pretty much to like a criminal. And instead of the police stepping in and doing their job, they went into the mic and let a crowd of people cheer, while the rest of us of color stood in fear, running home, crying to let everybody else know.
The armed people, for the most part, portray themselves as protectors of property or defenders of public safety rather than members of any single group or even counter-protesters. Discredited rumors of Antifa presence at Black Lives Matter events across the state proliferated on social media and spurred widespread interest from militia groups. Hall says the conflict at the courthouse wasn't isolated, and it heightened the already stewing tension between protesters and what rally leaders called armed vigilantes.
Myself included, we've been followed, we've been targeted, we've been agitated, we've been intimidated. And we're community members, so to feel like our lives weren't mattering every single day just wasn't okay for us.
The Montana Racial Equity Project's Michaela Cox said vigilante groups are less accountable than the police and have a long history of racist violence. Ahmaud Arbery was killed in Georgia earlier this year, and Trayvon Martin was killed in Florida in 2012, both by armed men.
Trayvon Martin's death sparked a movement, and the young black man who was attacked in Missoula in front of the car house by armed militiamen sparked this one.
The rally was organized in a way to protect speakers and attendees. Its location was released only hours before it took place. Organizers also rented out a private pavilion in the park so armed groups who showed up could be asked to leave.
We call on the city of Missoula, the chief of police, and all local governments and law enforcement to join us in rejecting and condemning vigilantism.
Among other measures, speakers also called for a ban on chokeholds, de-escalation and anti-racism training for the police department, and a prohibition on no-knock warrants. After the event, Cox said even standing idly on the sidelines, the presence of big, burly white men wielding ARs and pistols at rallies silences protesters.
I had multiple people come up to me today and say, I didn't go to any of the protests because I felt unsafe. And this was the first time I felt like I could feel safe coming to support my own life.
Rachel Carroll Rivas, co-director of the Montana Human Rights Network, says the tension between armed paramilitary interveners and protesters spreads beyond Missoula.
What we've seen over particularly the last few months is a really growing anti-government far-right militia movement in the state.
She says that growth began with demonstrations against the restrictions associated with COVID-19 and expanded to include presence at racial justice protests across the state. She also says MHRN has received incident reports on paramilitary group behavior in virtually every city where Black Lives Matter protests have occurred in Montana. At the rally in Missoula, patrol captain with the Missoula Police Department, Richard Stepper, monitored the event with several other officers. He said he was in full support of the message that afternoon and that the police department has an obligation to ensure that protesters feel safe and free of intimidation.
I think it's important so that they can truly get their message out and not be interrupted, not be intimidated, and not feel like they're in danger. I think it's important for us as an agency to take care of it.
He says he wasn't on site when the conflict between the protester and armed individuals occurred over a week ago at the courthouse, but he's been following the events closely and checking in on developments.
Law enforcement absolutely does not agree with a group of individuals chasing a young man into the lawn and tackling him and acting as their own private law enforcement. We absolutely disagree with that.
Those events are still under investigation by the Missoula Police Department. Depending on what investigators conclude, it will be referred to the city or county attorney's office. I'm Nick Mott, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.